Oh, here it is.
Here it is.
It's what you've been waiting for.
We are here. We are here in a surprise location.
Should we give them three guesses?
You want to do three guesses? I think we should.
Okay.
That was fun.
Ready?
Ready.
Here's your first guess.
Eh.
Here's your second guess.
Eh.
Here's your third guess.
Eh.
Actually,
you're pretty confident that nobody knows.
But you know what I just realized? That when we say special interview with Kristen Bell,
everybody knows where we are.
They're all going to know we're in the back house.
Yeah, we are in the back house with Kristen Bell, ladies and gentlemen. And we've actually been courting Kristen to do a podcast for quite some time. When we first met her, we said, we want to do a podcast with you. And she's like, about what? We're like, we don't care. We just love you. And we want to have you on our podcast. And here we are.
But you've actually been doing some really exciting work. And as I've heard both you and Rob talk about the work you've been doing, I have selfishly been like, I want to hear what these tools are. I want to hear what Kristen's creating. And then once we started talking about it, it just seemed like everybody needs this work that you're doing.
And also, I just want to set the stage that Kristen Hange has written on her wrist in black marker, ecstatic bliss. Mm-hmm. And Kristen Bell is sitting on the other side of me wearing jeans that have stars all over them. So just so everybody knows what's happening, I am the middle of the most beautiful Oreo cookie that's ever lived.
And you're dressed in white, so you're kind of like stuffing.
I am. I'm the total stuffing right now. So Kristen, thank you for being on the Create Podcast. We're so happy to have
you. I love it. In this moment, I can't think of any two people I'd rather have a conversation with.
Oh,
I know. I've been looking forward to this conversation.
I'm just so in love with you. I don't know what to do with myself.
I know. We love to flirt with Kristen.
She's very beautiful.
I have a thing
for
Kristens.
You really do. You have a Kristen thing.
I have a Kristen thing. It's my fetish. Yes, you know. Everyone has a thing. So, Kristen, how are you?
I'm great.
Thank you for being here. Actually, thank you for letting us be here.
Thank you for letting us crash your house.
And use my microphone.
And use your microphone.
I would love just to hear about how, will you tell everyone the topic of your study?
Yes. What's been getting birthed through me, hopefully, is a project called What Do I Do With My Anxiety?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, friends. Literally when Kristen said this was the title, I exhaled in a way that I felt I had anxiety, thinking, yes, this is what is needed.
Yeah, and you've talked about, really honestly on the podcast, Nat, about your own dealings with anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely been a through line for me through my whole life. So I'm so interested in hearing your perspective on it all.
Oh, great. Well, it has been my through line as well. And that's what, I think oftentimes that's what comes out of us is something that's been really helpful to us personally.
Yeah.
So, I started to have this vision of what would it look like if I gathered everything I could from the world of psychology. Because I have a very practical kind of grounded side of myself. Like I do like research. I don't like make it like the authority, but I think research is very helpful. And I think a field like psychology has been around for so long, looking at how we function as humans. And so I find that very helpful. But then I also have a very mystical side of myself. And so to me, the psychology is important, but the spirituality is also very important. Mm. And so I had this vision of creating something that looked at psychological tools, but also spiritual practices and ways of looking at the world and yourself that can bring freedom.
Mm. Well, and I do think anyone who's ever experienced anxiety, whether it's a lower grade, whether it's something that is causing disruptions in your life, whether it's something that causes panic attacks, or in any of the ways that it can show up, I do think freedom is the thing that people would say, oh, if only I could have that.
Right. When I look back over my life, I think there's been a couple periods of time where anxiety has been completely immobilizing, like when I had panic attacks. and life became very unbearable. So there is that extreme. But for the most part, when I look at the role anxiety has played in my life, it's held me back from things that I really want.
Mm.
Like when I have social anxiety or when I have anticipatory anxiety, it's like there's this thing that I want, but I have these fears and they're like colliding.
Oh.
And so I see over my life how many times I've said no because the anxiety was the dominant voice when I really, my inner being really wanted to say yes.
Oh, yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've shared even on the podcast, I think we were talking recently about future tripping, and that was how my anxiety always manifests. It's if there's something in the future that I want to do or I want to experience, it could be in the immediate future, it could be in the next hour, but the anxiety will start telling me all the reasons it's a bad idea, all the things
right.
that could go wrong, all the things worth worrying about, and then you talk yourself out of doing the thing when, like you said, your inner being really wants that experience.
Right. I recently had a friend, Josh Radner, who I was about to go into a new experience and was talking to him about I phrased it as I have questions, but really it was just anxiety. And he gave me that phrase, anticipatory anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yes, that's what I have all the time. And it's just this kind of spinning. My mind is just spinning about things I don't know. Like, it's just hypothetical situations.
Right. Someone recently told us that the acronym for fear is future events already ruined. And anxiety
yeah.
creates a fear that basically just creates an unlovable future that you don't want to live into. So then you hide
right.
from it instead of move towards it.
Right. Right. Instead of, like, if you can shift your thinking to, like, like anything is possible here. So what can I create? What can I envision? Like my anxiety is giving me this vision, but I'm actually able to be the master of my anxiety. And I can create this other vision of infinite possibility.
Mm. That's beautiful. I think it was Marianne Williamson who said, oftentimes we plan and put energy into preventing possible future disasters instead of expecting a miracle.
Right.
And in the unlimited possibility, anything is possible. But we're often putting our energy into what we don't want because we're afraid that it might
right.
happen.
I know Brené Brown writes about, I don't know the phrase, but the idea that you rehearse, like when you're tucking your kids in bed at night, it's easy to like, you feel so vulnerable that you start rehearsing, like, what if something bad happened?
Oh, yes.
What would I do? And I think it's an effort to make ourselves feel more secure. Like, if only I rehearse it in my head, then if it happens, then I'm going to be prepared. I'm going to be able to handle it better. But it's really just, it's not helpful at all. Like, why are we rehearsing tragedy?
Right.
Yeah. I know that there are many times where I will stop myself and be like, oh, I'm having a conversation with someone who isn't here. Like, I'm rehearsing
yes.
a possible conversation for the future. And I have to be like, cute little hangy baby, get in my arms. There's no one to talk to right now. But there's the blue sky to look at.
I know. The waiting is so hard,
isn't
it?
That funny?
And also, like, something we do in, like, positive visualization therapy is say, so when you're planning that conversation, why are you not planning how great it could go?
Right.
Like, why when you're if there's a difficult conversation, quote unquote, that you need to have, how come you're not rehearsing that you say, I really need to talk to you about this thing and here are my concerns. And the person says, I hear you and I want to hear you. And I'm so happy we're having this conversation. Like, you never rehearse it that way. So what are we giving power and energy to?
Right. And where's our alignment? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when did this vision come to you?
You know, I think it's been evolving. It wasn't like a flash of lightning. It's just been evolving over time. I think I maybe had one of the first ideas was creating a toolbox. Like, I love the idea of there's so many different ways to physiologically, like in our bodies, bring us out of the fight and flight into the rest, digest, heal kind of peaceful space. That that we like to operate from. I mean, there is a place for the energetic, like, I'm fired up, I have this task, but the trick is to keep the balance. Like, I think the trick is to be able to have the control to move from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to recognize I'm in this stressed out, kind of more panicky state, and what can I do to move into this calm, centered, more peaceful state? And so there are a lot of tools that you can use to do that. Like, science has found all sorts of things that move us from one state to the other. And so I had this idea, like, what would it look like if I created a toolbox of all these different techniques and things that I've tried that have helped? Because ultimately, I think we end up using the tool that fits best for us.
Yeah.
Like, there's no one thing for everybody. Like yoga is a very powerful practice that brings you into the parasympathetic. But to add that into your life as a regular practice, you have to enjoy it. So I like the idea of finding the tools that you really enjoy, that you find pleasurable, so that you keep doing it, so you keep going back to it.
Yeah, so it doesn't just feel like a nasty homework assignment that causes you more anxiety to do, or anxiety if you don't do it.
Right. So, like, one of the things that I've added into my life that has really helped me, especially over time as it's become a practice, but it became a practice because I enjoyed it. I meditate laying down on my bed with a blanket over me and I listen to a guided meditation, and it makes me so happy and it calms my thoughts. And I know there are other schools of meditation that, you know, to have the energy flowing, you need to sit up straight and ideally on the floor or wherever. But for me, it has to have like an element of this feels so great.
Ooh.
To the point where I want to do it every day. I try to do it every day at 1 o'clock. And sometimes I have like 20 minutes. Sometimes I have an hour. It just depends on the kind of day it is. Or sometimes I have to move it around. But that's my practice that I really look forward to.
And I love that, making pleasure the center of whatever practice you're doing. Because we often talk about doing practice until it becomes ritual, until it becomes sacred, and then it changes your life. And so if there's not pleasure in it, then it becomes another thing on your to-do list, and it can just cause you stress.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it also can make you feel bad about yourself.
Mm.
Like, I had all these good intentions, but I didn't get to it.
Mm.
And I feel like we were constantly exposed to things that will make us healthier and happier, but so often it just becomes one more thing on our list, instead of something that becomes an organic part of your life and what you enjoy.
Yeah,
so I know also, Natalie, you and I have talked about neuroplasticity.
Oh, I love it.
And one of the things I love about a practice that you really integrate, because it's just so easy, is that over time, then it starts to change the wiring of your brain.
Yeah.
And that makes me really excited.
Yes.
Because as much as anxiety has been a tool for me to go into, you know, what wants to come up, I also would like to be free from it.
Yeah.
So neuroplasticity gives me great hope, you know, like, things can change over time, and our brains were actually designed for efficiency. So neuropathways that we don't use get pruned back, and new ones are forming all the time.
Yeah, that is actually exciting, because I know so many people that I've spoken with about various things just feel, this is just who I am, or this has been with me for so long, I can't imagine ever changing it or being without it. But it's just because it's dominant. And as we start to add new habits and new rituals, new practices that can become more dominant, then it won't be a struggle to have to push us away something. It will just fall away as you focus your attention and energy on something else.
Yeah. So I, just for fun, I wanted to mention a couple of the other things like yoga that move us from sympathetic into parasympathetic.
We want them all.
I was so hoping you would give us your
tools.
You
know what? I think the list is endless. And I think the key is like, what makes you feel happy and centered? You know that really contented feeling? It's like any activity that gives you that, most likely you're in the parasympathetic. But rest and digest. And in research, they measure it by heart rate variability. That's how they can tell which state you're in. It's just the marker that they use. But like one of Rob's favorites that he just intuitively found, he every morning gets in the freezing cold pool and then takes an outdoor cold shower. But cold water is one of the things that puts you in the parasympathetic.
That makes me think of Wim Hof. Do you know that he's like holds all the world's records for like going in the coldest water ever, going into like the Antarctic in shorts. But he is a master at creating his thoughts and the power of the brain. But part of his morning ritual is the cold.
Right. Well, and you wouldn't expect it. Because like cold water, I feel like that makes me stressed. But but we have some sort of diving reflex. There's some reflex in our makeup that when we splashing cold water on your face, they say that's a good thing to do if you feel like you have a panic attack coming on. Splash cold water on your face. But then on the opposite side, another thing to get us into that state is anything that makes you your muscles relax. So also like a warm bath also puts you in that state.
Yeah.
A massage, anything that makes you, your muscles relax, signals to your body that you're out of danger and it moves you into that safe space.
Right. I wonder sometimes if there's so much stimulus in life that we get used to being in this anxious place where we always feel we're slightly in danger.
Yes. Well, all anxiety comes from perceived threat. So our anxiety is actually trying to keep us safe. I found that if you can look at it, if you can look at your anxiety with kindness, like, I see you're just trying to do your job.
It's like a little friend being like, I'm just worried about you and I want you to be okay. And then we're like so mad at it, you know? Like,
right.
I know for me when like anxiety comes up, I'm like, you're ruining it. Get out of here. I have things to do. Go away, anxiety, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to like, oh, it's you're here for me.
Yeah. I had this insight recently that my mind is so busy, which then anxiety comes out of that over-busy mind. But my mind is so busy trying to keep my heart safe.
Oh.
And I don't think we realize how resilient our hearts are. They're okay. But, like, our minds are so overactive. Like, I don't think you're going to be okay. I got to protect you from this, and I got to protect you from this. And what if this happens? And it's like, you know what? Just quiet down. Just settle it down. Because my heart, actually, I believe it's going to be okay.
Wow.
So I actually even wonder if, I haven't thought very much about this, but I bet anytime you like tune into your heart and try to operate more from that space and let your heart speak, the anxious thoughts would
heart is actually okay.
Yeah, but tune into that feeling of, what does it feel like when I feel safe and content and taken care of and it's all going to be okay?
As you said that, I could feel that inside of me.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you know that the yogis have this word for the space between the breath or the space between the heartbeats called the madhya. And they say that your joy or your happiness is in that space.
Oh.
It's in the space between heartbeats or the space between breaths. And it's kind of like that space, like I always think of it as the next breath or the next heartbeat is the gift that is given to me of like another moment to be alive. And so it's like there's a peace in the moment before the receiving of that gift. Right?
That's really interesting because when I mentioned the way science measures whether you're in the calm state is by your heart rate variability. And I didn't realize that our heart, there's different amounts of space between our heartbeats, and it kind of flows in a sine wave. And it ideally, if we can connect it to our breathing, that's like the ultimate state of like parasympathetic.
Wow.
But I know when I was sharing this with Rob, he had the thought, that's really interesting that that state that we're looking for is actually measured by your heart.
Yeah. Yeah, so the heart is the indicator.
Yeah.
And science has even said that, I think it's the Heart Map Institute, that they do all this study on the heart, and they say the heart actually receives the information 3 to 5 seconds before the brain.
But yeah.
Somehow we've been disconnected from that, and the brain, like, goes at it all first, right?
Yeah, I have heard a little bit about that, that our heart has some sort of its own intelligence.
Yeah, like it knows before the mind does, but we go to the intelligence of the mind as the go-to,
mm-hmm.
because that's dominant for us.
Mm-hmm.
But there is actually a possibility in taking more space to say, wait, what does the heart already know about this?
Yeah.
Right, the wisdom of the heart. And that's why I feel like a morning practice can be so helpful. Because if you have a meditation practice in the morning and then you tap into the wisdom of your heart, the wisdom of your heart knows where to go and it knows what to do and it knows how to lead you. But you have to create space around yourself to get quiet enough to hear that wisdom of your heart.
That's true. Yeah. It's... I think some of this stuff about anxiety is when you realize that you are not your anxiety, like you're the witness of the anxiety. And so ultimately the anxiety is not the master.
Mm-hmm.
Like you are the master. But I really, in this conversation, I love where this conversation is going because there's something about the heart. It's like, how much are you going to let your heart lead you and make
yes.
your decisions? And the mind is great for practical things. And sometimes the mind is really necessary for keeping us safe.
Yes.
But it's just like, it just can get out of control.
Uh-huh. Well, it's like the mind is this computer or this program that runs based on what it knows. So it will kind of collect the data of all of your experiences and
mm-hmm.
then tell you, do this or don't do this based on this information that I've collected from
right.
your own life, from stimulus it's seen, culture, conditioning.
Right.
But the heart, there's like different ways yoga describes it. They describe it as the unstruck. So the thing that's never been struck, the thing that's pure. It has like no preconceived notions of anything. It's just new and it's just whole. Or it's also described as the sound that is made without anything striking. So we think about the mind as like this chaos of all of these things, these combating information or things coming against each other all the time, creating this chaos and this dissonance. And the heart is the sound when nothing is striking. It's kind of the space of nothingness where anything is possible besides all that chaos. So when I think of my anxiety, it comes in loud and hard and strong and it's argumentative and it thinks it knows best. When I think of the space of my heart, it doesn't need to know anything.
Hmm.
It's just quiet. It's just still. It just is. And there's always a wisdom that comes through that that's more powerful.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to think of where to go next.
Well, I'd love to hear about some more of the tools.
Okay.
To shift from the things in the toolbox to shift from to the parasympathetic.
You know, I found a lot of these just from Googling it. So the list is really long. But anything from like sitting in the sun to like, and this is all stuff they've done research on, laying on your right side for some reason.
Mm.
I don't know why. But two that I found really interesting. One is people who say the rosary prayer. And the interesting thing about that is it's repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a prayer, but it's not a prayer that's based in like a lack. Oftentimes when we pray, it's because like we need something, but to sink into like a repetitive mantra where you're reminding yourself of what you, of your own truth. That is really helpful for putting someone in the parasympathetic. And then another one is music.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So they found that music, especially music that is about 70 beats per minute.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so cool that they can measure it.
Yeah. Oh. And so, like, classical music, I would have to get a list of, like, you know, what's 70 beats per minute. But I think you know when you're listening to something that puts you in that state.
Yeah. Ugh.
That's beautiful.
Cool. Yeah. So then the way that I'm kind of approaching it, anxiety, what do I do with my anxiety, is starting with the body. Like, there are ways that we can get physiologically into a different state. But in my experience, you can do all those things and still have anxiety. So then the question is, so now what do I do with my anxiety? And I've kind of designed it as a map. Like, you start here. Let's take care of this first, because we know how to do this. And then also what happens in those practices or tools is over time, your brain does start to change. And you start to see little increments of, oh, yeah, I am sleeping better than I used to. Or I think it's really helpful to mark, like, the little changes that are happening, because oftentimes these are patterns and thoughts and beliefs that have been in there for a while. So it will take a while to repattern.
Mm.
But celebrating the little changes, I think, is really helpful. So once you kind of address that, and then you find yourself with, okay, but I'm still really anxious. Now what? I found that's a really good opportunity to explore and to ask the anxiety, what do you have to tell me?
Ooh.
Like, obviously this is, there's something in there that either, you know, it's a truth that wants to come out. It's, something that I do feel threatened by that I haven't been able to like get at the root of. Sometimes I think it's just a matter of sitting with anxiety and letting it have a little light, because sometimes the anxiety is like the monster under the bed.
Mm-hmm.
It's really scary until you take a look at it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, that's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the tools that I think is fascinating, and again, it has a lot of research behind it, which I find helpful, because it's so simple. Sometimes the tools are so simple that we're like, really?
Can that really work? that can't be it.
But one of the things that they've found is that people who write about their feelings, and it can be as little as like 3 times a week for 15 minutes, a session, there are all these biological markers that change, like immune function goes up, blood pressure goes down. There's all these like stress markers that go in the positive direction when people write about their feelings for as little as 15 minutes, 3 times a week. And they even did one study with people who were taking the GRE, a graduate entrance exam, and they had them, I think, do 5 sessions of writing, 15 minutes each again, about their feelings, their anxiety, whatever it was, about taking the exam. And then they had another group write the same amount of time, but they could only write about the contents of their closet. They could not write about any feelings. And the group that wrote about their feelings had an increase in score from pre-test to post-test by about 75 points.
Wow.
Yeah.
actually like a huge margin of change.
Yeah.
Wow.
In a relatively little time investment.
Right.
But just the act of writing about your feelings, I mean, oftentimes it brings you insight. You know what I mean? Like when you write about them, you kind of, in my experience, you kind of circle.
Yes.
You circle it and you come back to like, oh yeah, that's the truth.
That's exactly right.
There's something about when it's ruminating in your head, it just keeps being the same tape playing over and over. But there's something about writing it, it almost hijacks the loop a little bit. And even if it's just for a few minutes, it's long enough to create a space for more clarity or more insight, as you said.
I've always felt like, you know, such a fan of a morning practice, but I love to write I don't feel good in my skin if I don't write every morning.
Mm.
But I've always found that if I write, and I write whatever is going on, by the time I finished it, and like I like to write first and then meditate, by the time I come out of the meditation, I feel like it's been solved somehow. Mm-hmm. Or there's an answer been given, or there's an insight, or I'm not looking at it the same way. It's like a process of going through. As if when I have all these bunched up feelings inside of me, it's like I can't see my way through this right now. I'm going to put it all down on the page. And in that, there's a release that happens, a surrender.
Yes, I like that, adding that at the beginning of meditating. Because sometimes it's true. Sometimes when you quiet your mind, you do get the answer you were looking for.
Yeah.
And sometimes it happens when you're writing, but sometimes it also happens when you're meditating.
And I think there's something with the writing, too, where you're not writing to come up with your own solution. You're just writing to write it.
Right.
And so there's something about not having the requirement of a result, or just writing to get it out, that actually creates space for something.
Yeah. It does seem too, when we're writing to ourselves, it's like this very kind of private, safe space.
Mm.
And we can be almost like a mother to ourselves. Like we speak, I speak to myself so much more kindly when I'm writing.
Yes.
Like doing personal kind of journaling writing.
Yes.
Oh, so much. And if you've ever done the practice of, I do this group with women every new moon, and one of the exercises we sometimes do is you write a letter to yourself, but with your non-dominant hand. Because with your non-dominant hand, it looks like a four-year-old is writing the letter. And so you write a letter to yourself in your non-dominant hand. And what's fascinating about what comes out when you can write so slowly and so imperfectly is all that wants to come out is, I'm so proud of you. I love you so much. I can't believe I grew up to be you. You're so cool. And it's just fascinating what just organically comes out.
Like a really nurturing voice.
Really nurturing voice. Yeah.
And don't you feel like the more you get to know that nurturing voice on paper, then you can start to be that nurturing voice for yourself in life.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that, but that's, I think that's really true.
Like I'll watch myself see that nurturing, like mama voice wrap around me in a different way that it didn't used to. Like where there used to be a critical voice, there's now a much more loving and supportive and compassionate voice.
Mm-hmm. And that becomes something really powerful to access, because in terms of anxiety, let's say many of us have the issue, or what we're going to call a problem of anxiety, but then we often will have a problem with that problem.
Yes.
Right? I don't want to be the person who has this problem, or I'm identifying myself as less than or failing because of this thing. So now there's like two problems to solve.
Right, right. It's really interesting because it's like the more you try to resist it, the bigger it gets.
Mm.
And one of the things that I'd like to address is like, how can we change how we think of our anxiety? Like, can we really get to the point where we can say anxiety is my friend? Because it tells me the truth. It like reminds me to return to the place of the heart. It tells me when something's off, you know, like maybe I'm not heading in the right direction here. It makes me back up and really think about what's going on. It's, I think our bodies have their own way of telling us the truth, and anxiety is one of those ways.
I love that, because it's almost like the mind is trying to do what anxiety can do. You know what I mean? Like, the mind's trying to tell us, like, I'm looking out for you. I'm just trying to protect you, da-da-da. But really, we can say, babe, I don't need you to do that.
Right.
Because I have my little friend anxiety over here who will let me know anytime I need. Just relax.
Yeah.
Let me go back to my heart.
I mean, sometimes anxiety is good, because it either tells you something needs to change, or it's giving you the motivation to take action. So sometimes it can be a real, like, energizing, positive force, because you're like, okay, this is what I got to do. I know, Pete Holmes is one that I've watched. He says that when he gets, like, the rumbling anxiety, he knows it's time to go out and do a comedy set. He's like been, whatever it is, he needs the outlet. It's like there's this, like, I don't know, it's a motivating force for him.
Yeah.
At times. I mean, anxiety takes so many different forms.
So many forms.
But I do think it's helpful to start looking at how is this actually a gift in my life? Like, I know sometimes there can be, like, performance anxiety, and it's possible to look at, and I was going to mention Rob, but I was like, I shouldn't bring him into this, because I don't know exactly what it is, but I know that he still gets nervous before he does anything big, especially, or before he does something in front of people, especially if it's, like, new content, something that hasn't, he just doesn't know how it's going to go. To this day, I mean, he's been doing this for 25 years, he still gets nervous every time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people would label it as anxiety, but he labels it as nervousness. And then he also says, and I like that feeling because it makes me feel like I'm alive.
Mm.
Yes.
And that's like, whoa, that's a whole different shit. That's a completely different way of seeing it for me, because I'm like, anything along the spectrum, whether it's nervousness or, like, extreme anxiety, I don't want any of
it. Right.
Well, it's a way of your body going, I care.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when you, like, meet someone you're attracted to.
Right.
And they call you for the first time and you call back, like, that butterfly you get in your tummy. It lets you know you're alive and that you care, which is so different than when you don't have that charge around someone. It's almost like, oh, this. It's a way of letting you know you're on to something.
Yeah,
I find that all the time with writing clients. When I have someone who's like, I want to write this, but I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, then that's why you must go into that idea, the one that feels like, I don't know if I can do this. That's where the juice is.
It always feels like the body doesn't know the difference between excitement and fear. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in love with something or excited about something, you want to move towards it. And when you're afraid of something, you want to move away from it. And the body doesn't know the difference. It just feels the feeling. And then it's like the mind says go or no. And it's like what we were saying before. Can we let the heart make that decision?
Right. And then also, I think sometimes anxiety, it's preparing our body for the demands that are coming.
Ah.
So if you can look at it that way, the thing that I'm about to do, I'm going to need to be fully on. And so this anxiety is like, it's like revving me up. It's giving me what I'm going to need.
Oh,
I love
that.
Oh, you and I just both got so turned on by that idea.
Because I do think there's a great reframing here of everything that you're saying is we have labeled anxiety as a bad thing. We've labeled anxiety as something you want to get rid of. You don't want to have it. You don't want to tell people you have it. If it comes up, you want to get rid of it as fast as possible. And what you're really suggesting is, what if we look at it in a different way? What if we learn to sit with it? What if we learn to love it? And what if we can learn that there are gifts here?
Yes.
And that is so powerful.
Yeah. And it takes a sting out of it. I mean, if you can lighten up and just be like, oh, look, anxiety. Like I did this the other day when we went to a Christmas party. We were about to walk in and I just said to Rob, I was like, oh, here comes the anxiety. But, like, I feel like if I can laugh about it, it, like, takes the power out of it. I mean, it's still there in some form, but it's, like, not going to stop me.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of empowering, because as I said it, we were walking up these steps, and I was like, oh, here comes the anxiety.
I'm walking anywhere.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. We did a little game once, right, with our egos.
Uh-huh.
Where we gave them names and we put them in outfits.
Uh-huh.
I forget what they
were. You dressed them up. It's something I got from Martha Beck your inner critic. She would talk about envisioning it as like a cartoon dragon or a snake or a serpent and giving it a nickname. And she would say she feeds it a cookie and then tells it to go to sleep.
Uh-huh.
You know? But like... I think we, so like just spinning on that, we started giving our, like we would draw ours as like cartoon characters and give them like silly little names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember what they were, but it was
They were very funny at the moment.
So then we would try to like decide like, are Krista and Natalie talking or like the two cartoon monsters talking to each other? Because if that's the case, then we're going to have a cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. And then we'll come back to this later.
We'll come back later.
I love what you were saying before, before I hit record. You were talking about anxiety as a spiritual path.
Yes. Yeah.
And I had just never heard anyone say anything like that before. And as I hear you talk more and more about anxiety as the thing that asks you to return home to yourself and check in with your heart and something to embrace, I can see what you mean.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like this thing. I can't bury it. It just, it's here. And
it's
so
here.
What am I going to do about it?
Oh,
yeah.
I love that.
And I do feel like it's been a good tool for me to kind of dig deeper and kind of follow that path. Like, what actually is this? Like, I feel like I'm spinning. I'm all, like, wired and tense and can't concentrate. And what is this? What is this at its very root?
Yeah.
And... I mean, sometimes that journey is not that helpful. You know, it depends. It just depends. Sometimes it's not all about going digging down. And maybe it's not helpful to stay down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful to get the insight and the wisdom. And then it helps you know, I think, better how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you start to see how these thoughts that I'm having aren't really based in reality.
Yes.
They're just things that I've thought over and over again to the point that deep down I believe this. But if I can like bring it up and kind of unravel it, I think that's really helpful. I guess I'm just hesitating because it's not good to stay down there because it's actually about the life that's coming and what's possible and like living from a new place every day.
Yeah. The here and now,
which is why I love your morning practice is because every day is a new start.
It's a new day.
Yeah. Every day is a chance to live more from your heart or whatever your intention is. The morning practice is a great way to start that.
Thank you. And, you know, this conversation is so juicy and so yummy. And thank you for being exactly who you are and doing the work that you're doing on the planet. It's such a gift to all of us. Because, like, I tend to think of myself as someone who, like, kind of goes with the flow and is, like, super free. But my anxiety will dress up in other costumes so that I don't realize it's anxiety that's running the show. But the conversation that we're having right now makes me go, oh, all right. So when I get into overwork, what's really going on is anxiety, but it's taken on a different job description. But if I can pause in those moments when I don't feel good and go, what's going on from this place? More often than not, it's anxiety dressed up in some way that just wants attention.
Right. And when we get good at recognizing it, because it does have lots of forms, like perfectionism, overbusyness, compulsive behaviors. There's all sorts of things that come from anxiety. But the quicker we are to identify it and be like, oh, look, anxiety, it allows us that opportunity then to like return to like, oh, where did I kind of get off here?
Right. And then, and maybe just thinking out loud is like, maybe in those moments is I can try one of the tools. I can go lay on my right side or play a song or take a bath, you know,
right.
Have a little meditation.
Dance.
I mean, I do love a dance break.
For some reason, I just pictured you dancing.
Mm-hmm. You know that I love to.
Yeah.
You know that when Natalie and I were writing our book, we would always, if we found we would take dance breaks. We put on a song and we'd say, we'd talk about the power of pelvic thrusts. You know what I mean? Like when you're over stressed and you just like do a little pelvic thrust. For all of you listening at home, I'm actually pelvic thrusting in my seat right now.
Yeah.
But it like relieves all tension.
Yeah.
Like at some moment I left the present moment and I left my body and I need to get back into it.
I mean, we all, like life is about returning, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like returning to ourselves, returning to like what we know is true. And
I love what you say about becoming the master is really just about understanding, oh, I can shift this. I can take a step in a different direction. If this path that I'm going down is causing me to feel more anxious or more pain, oh, I can find that balance for myself, or I can take a contrary action, or I can take a bath right now. And knowing that even one step in a different direction will start to slowly create some change. So
yeah.
There's hope there.
Yeah. And this is something I often talk about in the beginning, but I didn't. But your comment reminded me. One of my dominant questions throughout my life when I would experience anxiety would be, what is wrong with me?
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's one of those questions that I see how neuroplasticity has changed my brain. Like I no longer... I mean, maybe every once in a while, but I no longer have that thought, what's wrong with me? Yeah. And there's a whole nother area of like, they've done research and found that, you know, some people are more, have sensitive nervous systems. Some people are more emotionally reactive, and they've done studies on infants and have found that there are different ways that infants react to new stimulus in the environment. And so they labeled, I guess I'm getting into this now, they labeled 20% of the infants were highly reactive, 40% were quiet. They really didn't react to the new stimulus much at all. And then 40% were a mix. And then they followed these infants and found that the 20% that were highly reactive grew into adults who were more shy, inhibited, had more anxiety. And so there was that part. And then they also found that they tended to be more introverted. Like the things that are going on in the world, they took that stuff in differently and realized that in order to manage their own nervous systems, they needed to withdraw from stimulus. So that's kind of how they saw temperament playing into like introversion and extroversion.
Wow.
Is that genetically we're given like nervous systems that have a certain sensitivity, and that can play into like how you experience the world and anxiety levels. I know like when I'm out and it's gotten like anxiety can creep up when my nervous system is telling me it's time to withdraw.
Yes.
So I guess I got into all of that because of that question, like what is wrong with me? And it's very freeing to find out like we're all wired differently. Like it's okay.
And we always say, and you're wired perfectly for whatever it is that you're here to do.
Right.
So you don't need to be wired the way someone else is or think that you're wrong for being wired the way you're wired.
Right. And you can look at it as like, why can't I do what all these other people seem to be able to do? Or you can say, oh, what gifts are coming out of this?
Yeah, what gifts are coming out of this?
I always remember that first in our friendship because I watched Kristen hold 10 projects at the same time. And then I would always feel so bad about myself if I had like 2 projects at once and I was feeling stressed about it, right? And I was like, if only I could be more like Kristen. But and Kristen was so loving to be like, but Natalie, like, there are things that you do that, like, I could never, you know, and it's like, it's such a funny game to try to be someone else.
Oh, yeah. There's so many things she's a master at that, like, I could, oh my gosh, I would just fail completely if I tried.
We want it all.
And we've often said, like, it's the reason that we're perfect wives and partners for each other.
Yeah.
Because we actually met someone the other day who said, oh, you guys aren't really wives. I really thought you were, because you always say that. But it's because we're perfect for each other, because we each have strengths that the other one can learn and grow from,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's this funny game we play that makes us anxious when we're trying to be, when we're a peach trying to be an apple. It's like, your job is just to be a beautiful peach. You were made that way.
And I would imagine it's like, twice the fun to create together, right?
It is twice the fun.
And twice the pelvic thrust.
Uh-huh. And twice the perspective. You know, that that's why we love to partner with each other, is because we can bring all of our different gifts to the table. I mean, I've seen that with you and Rob. You both have very different gifts. And it's cool how you use them both in your partnership with each other to serve each other. And I see that really clearly, and it's so beautiful. I feel like life has this way of pairing us with people that have those gifts and tools
so
that
are
the right complement.
We don't need to be everything. We're given the people and the assets and all the things.
Right. And if we're always looking at what we can't do, then we're not like
seeing what we can do.
What we can do and what wants to flow out of us.
That's right.
Yeah.
Aww.
So good.
Kristen! Don't you feel like the funnest thing in the world would be just to like get under a blankie and just get Kristen to talk to us about psychology all the time?
You know, my secret desire is actually to kidnap Kristen and take her somewhere exotic
and go dancing
with her somewhere. Like, I want to steal her from her family for
You know what? This
three
is
days.
Perfect. It's the perfect balance.
It's so true.
You want to cuddle with her.
The anxious introvert wants to cuddle.
And I'm like, we're going dancing in Mexico, you know? I love the spiritual path that you are on. I love what a seeker and a mystic you are. I love it all.
That's where all the juice is.
Yes.
Magic.
All the magic.
I call these two my magical friends.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being willing to share this work and this vision and this journey. I know it's deeply personal, but that's what makes it so universal to
you. Thank you.
So such a blessing for everyone who's going to listen to this. So thank you.
Oh,
and it's
so
just
fun.
A joy to see you. It's a good excuse.
I know. It is.
I know. I'm so glad you're in LA. I'm so glad this is your second home.
It is.
It is. It totally
Actually,
is.
When we were knocking on your door, we were standing outside. We said, doesn't it feel kind of like we're teenagers home from college coming home?
I love
and
it.
Been like, this is our home.
I love
What's
it.
In the fridge? And also, I just know how many people that your work is affecting and will affect through this podcast and will is affecting as you bring it into the world. So just thank you for being brave enough to do the work and share it.
Thank you.
We love you.
Love you guys.
We love you.
Yay!
Thank you so much for listening. We love to feel like we have friends all over the world in you who are committed to doing their dream on the planet.
And if you liked this podcast and you want to find out more about what we're doing or who we are, our pop-up classes, our online classes, you can check all of that out at thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to be part of our Facebook community, you can go to the Create Community page. That's C.R.E.A.T.E.Community.
And if you loved this podcast, why not share it with a friend?